माधव कुंज बिहारी गोपी जना वल्लभा गिरिवर धारी गोपी जना वल्लभा गिरिवर धारी यशोदानंदन व्रज जन रंजन यशोदानंदन व्रज जन रंजन यमुना तीरावन चारी यमुना तीरावन चारी जय राधा माधव कुंज विहारी जय गोपी जन वल्लभ गिरिवर धारी यशोदानंदन ब्रज जन रंजन यमुना तीरावन चारी जय राधा माधव कुंज विहारी जय ओम विष्णुपाद परमहंस परिव्राजकाचार्य अष्टोत्तरशत श्री श्रीमद् डिवाइन ग्रेस एसी भक्ति वेदांत स्वामी श्रील प्रभुपाद की जय। अनंत कोटि वैष्णव वृंद की जय। ग्रंथराज श्रीमद्भागवतम की जय। ऑल ग्लोरीज टू द असेंबल्ड डिवोटीज। ऑल ग्लोरीज टू श्री श्री गुरु एंड गौरांग। नारायणं नमस्कृत्य नरं चैव नरोत्तमं देवीं सरस्वतीं व्यासं ततो जयमुदीरयेत् नष्टप्रायेषु भद्रेषु नित्यं भागवत सेवया भगवती उत्तमश्लोके भक्तिर्भवति नैष्ठिकी। ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। So we're continuing from chapter 9 of canto 7, text 37. Actually, yesterday we should have covered up to 36, that's per the schedule. We did only one verse yesterday. So I'll get through, so we'll do 37 today. So I'll summarize the previous verses. तस्मै भवान् हयशिरस्तनुवं हि बिभ्रद् वेदद्रुहावति बलौ मधुकैटभाख्यौ हत्वा नयच्छ्युतिगणांश्च रजस्तमश्च Satvam tava priyatamam tanumamananti. Tasmai bhavan haya shiras tanuvam hi bibhrat. Vedadruhavati balau madukaita bakhyau. Hatva nayat shuti ganamscha rajastamascha. Satvam tava priyatamam tanumamananti. Tasmai bhavan haya shiras tanuvam hi bibhrat. Vedadruhavati balau madukaita vakhyau. Hatva nayashchuti ganamscha rajastamascha. Satvam tava priyatamam tanumamananti. Tasmai bhavan haya shiras tanuvam hi bibhrat. Vedadruhavati balau madukaita bhakhyau. Hatva nayashchuti ganamscha rajastamascha. Satvam tava priyatamam tanumamananti. Ladies, please. Tasmai bhavan haya shiras tanuvam hi bibhrat. Vedadruhavati balau madukaita vakhyau. Hatva nayachruti ganamscha rajastamascha. Satvam tava priyatamam tanumamananti. Tasmai bhavan haya shiras tanuvam hi bibhrat. Vedadruhavati balau madukaita vakhyau. Hatva nayachruti ganamscha rajastamascha. Satvam tava priyatamam tanumamananti. Tasmai unto Lord Brahma. Bhavan, your lordship, hayashiraha, having the head and neck of a horse, tanuvam, the incarnation, he indeed, bibhrat, accepting, vedadruhau, two demons were against the Vedic principles, atibalau, extremely powerful, Madhu Kaitabhakyo, known as Madhu and Kaitabha, Hatva, killing, Anayat, delivered, Shruti Ganan, all the different Vedas, Sama, Yajur, Rig and Atharva, Cha and Rajatamacha, by representing the modes of passion and ignorance. Satvam, pure transcendental goodness. Tava, your priyatamam, most dear. Tanum, form as Hayagriva. Amananti, they honor. The translation and purport by Srila Prabhupada ki jai. My dear Lord, when you appeared as Hayagriva with the head of a horse, you killed two demons known as Madhu and Kaitava, who were full of the modes of passion and ignorance. Then you delivered the Vedic knowledge to Lord Brahma. For this reason, all the great saints accept your forms as transcendental, untinged by material qualities. Report. The Supreme Personality of Godhead, in his transcendental form, is always ready to give protection to his devotees. As mentioned herein, the Lord, in the form of Hayagriva, killed two demons named Madhu and Kaitava when they attacked Lord Brahma. Modern demons think that there was no life in the beginning of creation. But from Srimad Bhagavatam we understand that the first living creature created by the Supreme Personality of Godhead was Lord Brahma, who is full of the Vedic understanding. Unfortunately, those entrusted with distributing Vedic knowledge, such as the devotees engaged in spreading Krishna consciousness, may sometimes be attacked by demons. But they must rest assured that demoniac attacks will not be able to harm them, for the Lord is always prepared to give them protection. The Vedas provide the knowledge by which we can understand the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Vedaishcha sarvair ahameva vedyaha. The devotees of the Lord are always ready to spread knowledge by which one may understand the Lord through Krishna consciousness. But the demons, being unable to understand the Supreme Lord, are full of ignorance and passion. Thus the Lord, whose form is transcendental, is always ready to kill the demons. By culturing the mode of goodness, one can understand the position of the transcendental Lord and how the Lord is always prepared to remove all obstacles on the path of understanding Him. In summary, whenever the Lord incarnates, He appears in His original transcendental form. As the Lord says in Bhagavad Gita, chapter 4, text 7, Yada yada hi dharmasya glanir bhavati bharata abhyutthanam adharmasya tadatmanam sujamyaham. Whenever and wherever there is a decline in religious practice, O descendant of Bharata, and a predominant rise of irreligion, at that time I descend myself. It is simply foolish to think of the Lord as being originally impersonal, but accepting a material body when He appears as a personal incarnation. Whenever the Lord appears, He appears in His original transcendental form, which is spiritual and blissful. But unintelligent men, such as the Mayavadis, cannot understand the transcendental form of the Lord, and therefore the Lord chastises them by saying, Avajananti mam mudha manushim tanumashritam. Fools deride me when I descend in the human form. Whenever the Lord appears, whether as a fish, a tortoise, a hog, or any other form, we should always understand that He maintains His transcendental position and that His only business, as stated here, is hatva, to kill the demons. The Lord appears in order to protect the devotees and kill the demons. Paritranaya sadhunam vinashaya cha dushkutam. Since the demons are always ready to oppose Vedic civilization, they are sure to be killed by the transcendental form of the Lord. Oma jnana timirandhasya jnananjana shalakaya chaksurunmilitam yena tasmai shri gurave namaha shri chaitanya mano bhishtam sthapitam yena bhutale svayam rupa kadamihyam dadati svapadantikam Vanchakalpatarubhyascha Kripa Sindhubhya Evacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shvasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare. So before I begin, I'd like to welcome Prasipanthi and Goloka back. They were gone for a few weeks and missed them, and they were happy to be back. Very well. So yesterday you covered 33, 34. Let's see. Yeah, tasyeva devato mujakala shakti. That's what you covered yesterday. Right? So I'll just, so there's continuity. Yesterday's verse is 33. Prahlad Maharaj is praying, this cosmic manifestation, the material world, is also your body. This total lump of matter is agitated by your potent energy known as Kala Shakti, and thus the three modes of material nature are manifested. You awaken from the bed of Shesha, Ananta, and from your navel a small transcendental seed is generated. It is from this seed that the lotus flower of the gigantic universe is manifested, exactly as a banyan tree grows from a small seed. Text 34. From that great lotus flower, Brahma was generated. But Brahma certainly could see nothing but the lotus. Therefore, thinking you to be outside, Lord Brahma dove into the water and attempting to find the source of the lotus for 100 years. He could find no trace of you, however, for when a seed fructifies, the original seed cannot be seen. Text 35. Lord Brahma, who is celebrated as Atma Yoni, having been born without a mother, was struck with wonder. Thus he took shelter of the lotus flower, and when he had been purified, after undergoing severe austerities for many hundreds of years, he could see that the cause of all causes, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, was spread throughout his own body and senses, just as aroma, although very subtle, is perceived in the earth. 36. Lord Brahma could then see you possessing thousands and thousands of faces, feet, heads, hands, thighs, noses, ears and eyes. You were very nicely dressed, being decorated and bedecked with varieties of ornaments and weapons. Seeing you in the form of Lord Vishnu, your symptoms and form being transcendental, your legs extending from the lower planets, Lord Brahma achieved transcendental bliss. And then today's verse, my dear Lord, when you appeared as Hayagriva with the head of a horse, you killed two demons known as Madhu and Kaitabha, who were full of the modes of passion and ignorance. Then you delivered the Vedic knowledge to Lord Brahma. For this reason, all the great saints accept your forms as transcendental, untinged by material qualities. I'll begin from where we left off yesterday, where Jai Baladev asked a question. Acharyanishtha showed us a couple of videos on the structure of the universe and how the Bhumandala is like a disk, and then there are the seven subterranean planets, and at the very bottom is Lord Ananta with the universe on his head, he's speaking to the four Kumaras. Then the seven planetary systems above to Lord Brahma, and then there's Jambudvipa, the whole description given in the fifth canto. And Jai Baladev Prabhu's question was, do we really need to know all these details? Do we really need to get into this technical stuff? Isn't it enough for us to take care of our sadhana and some service? So one answer can be, sure, yeah, because this is technical stuff, perhaps a little academic, and not everyone can appreciate, because this is measurements and distances and stuff happening at the cosmic level, and how do I worry about these things? I have my service to do, I have my japa to do. So that's true. That is definitely valid and true. Another way to look at it is from Vyasadeva's perspective for a moment. So Vyasadeva wrote the Srimad Bhagavatam for who? For the Stri, Shudra and Vijabandhu. He wrote to for everyone in Kali Yuga, for all of us. And he knows Kali Yuga people don't have the intellectual capacity to hold something like this. Right? That's in the beginning itself. He says, oh, Chakre Shatputa Samhita. And he saw Lokasya Ajanata. That the people of Kali Yuga, they cannot understand squat about anything. Manda sumanda matayo, manda bhagya. They're lazy, unintelligent, unfortunate, and always disturbed. You tell a disturbed person, this is the structure of the universe, it's like, don't waste my time. Still, it's there in the pages of the Bhagavata. So there's a purpose. The purpose is when we're coming from the first canto through 5 and 7 and 9, and it may seem academic, it may seem, what is all this? And the hope is by the time we reach 10th canto, we have an appreciation for Krishna. Our affection for Krishna should develop, even if it's in very minuscule quantity, infinitesimal quantity. Some attraction for Krishna should grow. And once that attraction is grown, when we look back at all the other cantos, then we have a sense of, wow. And Prabhupada says that love, we say in English, the devil is in the details. Yeah? And Prabhupada says, love means details. Now, everything about the, let's say, worship of the deities and how we decorate the deities, the details matter. And one who knows how to dress properly, or worship properly, not just the artistic, aesthetic side, but the devotional side, they're careful about details. When serving the spiritual master or the serving of the devotees, details matter. This is not one of my strengths, I must admit. But that's something that I think about, and I guess trying to work on it. But love is in the details. So when Prahlad Maharaj, who has the Lord sitting in front of him, is speaking about technical stuff, it's not technical, it's an appreciation of the details. Wow, what an amazing way that you create this material world. He's only speaking about the material opulences of the Lord at this point. But he's appreciating. Because we appreciate, honestly, if we see carefully, if you hear the memories of Srila Prabhupada or the devotees of Prabhupada speaking, they pick up every little detail of Prabhupada, the gestures of Prabhupada, the way he walked, the way he sat, the way he drank water from his cup. You'll hear the devotees will say, you know, I remember in one of the memories he would say, Prabhupada would pick up the cup like this with his pinky pointing out. And he had a very elegant way of drinking his water. Or if you watch the videos, how Prabhupada would eat, how he would break the roti. Every little detail becomes like, it's interesting. I want to know. I appreciate. It's part of the loving relationship. We want to appreciate details. So let's hear it in this context. Prahlad Maharaj is appreciating the details of the Lord's activities. Like for example, in the Bhagavatam, when Krishna enters Dwaraka, all the residents have come to receive him. But each of the residents receives Krishna in a very particular way, according to their position within society, if you will. Of course, in Krishna's family, they're all his devotees. But simultaneously, there is the social aspect also going. So Krishna, when he meets the devotees, he offers his obeisances to Vasudev and Devaki. He embraces Uddhava. He accepts obeisances from the other younger persons, and the ministers, I guess they salute him or something, they, you know, the way they receive him. And the ladies, the prostitutes in Dvaraka, there were apparently prostitutes also, and they gaze at Krishna in a very, very anticipating sort of way, and Krishna only glances at them. And that's the way he... But that glance is detailed in the Bhagavatam. Oh, he had glanced at them. Now we wonder why Vyasadeva writes, he glanced at the prostitute, okay, whatever. But that's the detail of that affection. And it is meant to bring joy and appreciation of how Krishna perfectly reciprocates. The reason I'm, I guess, saying this more and more, so we don't necessarily set it aside as technical. I don't need to know this. Yeah, we don't. Because by bhakti we appreciate it will come within the heart, the realization. But it's nice that another devotee, Prahlad Maharaj, is appreciating these details. Wow, look at him. Look at the depth of his realization that there is clarity, there is focus. You know, nowadays, as technology is developing, we see that our phone screens or computer screens are becoming higher and higher in definition, like down to every little pixel, whatever the new screen is, 5K something, Prahlad will know all the details, whatever, 5K, down to such crystal level of detail that you can appreciate a picture. If you compare that to the old monochrome or, you know, 486 computer screens where things were kind of hazy, why do we appreciate the high definition? Because you get to see the details. You get to see the small, little things. And like, wow, that's nice. This is super high definition. And so Prahlad Maharaj is appreciating every little thing about the Lord. So these section of verses, Prahlad is glorifying the Lord's creative potency, the creation itself, and the third, today's verse, of the Lord's activities within this creation. So he's going progressively. First he talked about his qualities. Who am I to say anything? But since I've been asked by all the demigods to offer some prayers, I am. And then what's the qualities of the devotee of Krishna? What should one carry in one's heart? Humility. And that humility allows for appreciating the Lord. Just as pride blocks any appreciation of Krishna. Because with pride, the appreciation stops with us or at us. We can only see our qualities when one is proud. Look at me. But when one is humble, one sees the qualities of the Lord and qualities of Krishna, and then the Guru and the Guru Parampara and the Supreme Lord and other Vaishnavas. So he's developing his, I guess, thesis of prayers in such a way that slowly and slowly, then he's now getting into the creation. Why does he need to talk of creation? Because we are here. We are in this material world. And he talks about how the Lord just creates the entire material world by just a small part of his actual potency as Mahavishnu. Because Mahavishnu is considered to be the portion of the portion of the plenary portion of Krishna. Which means the opulence that Mahavishnu exhibits is very, very tiny and fractional compared to all the opulences that Krishna possesses. Now that doesn't mean Mahavishnu is any less. It means that in the form of Mahavishnu, he only exhibits those potencies. For example, let's say, Prabhupada was asked, what's the difference between Vishnu and Krishna? And Prabhupada said, there's no difference. The only way to understand is that when Krishna goes to the office, he's called Vishnu. Because in the office, he does certain things. In this case, he does the activity of creation. So, if his, let's say any one of us has a particular thing we do at a workplace or something. I'm going to pick on Zach for a moment. Not because I'm comparing him to Krishna, but just as an example. Now, Zach, who comes to temple, he painted the lobby and the walls blue because we asked him to. Now, Zach, because when he's here, he paints the wall blue. Now, that doesn't mean he has no other skill. He's a musician. He has other skills. He studies Prabhupada's books, and he has, you know, he's developing his understanding of those teachings. But when he's painting the wall, that doesn't have to manifest necessarily. That his music skills and abilities don't manifest when he's painting the wall. It's limited to that function that he needs to do. So like that, Mahavishnu's function is creation. So is the portion of the portion of the plenary portion of Krishna. When Krishna appears as himself, all his opulences manifest. So this creation is such that simply from that little tiny fraction of his potency, universes manifest, and within each universe he enters as Garbhadakshaya Vishnu. And within each atom he manifests as Paramatma. The reason being that energy without the energetic cannot function, it cannot move. Just as without the soul in the body, however good looking the body is, however skillful the body can be, none of one's artistic ability, physical ability, beauty, wealth, nothing will manifest, because the body is energy and the soul is the energetic in that frame of reference. So all of this material energy doesn't move, doesn't manifest its beauty without Krishna's presence as Paramatma. That is why we have magnetism, electricity, all the chemical processes, we can write chemical equations. It's because of Paramatma's presence. Those are all his opulences. H plus O2 plus O, two atoms of hydrogen, somehow they combine with an atom of oxygen, you got water. Wow. That's because of Paramatma's opulence. Otherwise, it won't work. Etc., etc. Just yesterday, I saw a 1 minute video about how beautiful the whole system around us is, the Earth, right? Your own planet Earth. And if you measure the speed of Earth at the equator, it is 1,000 miles per hour. That's high speed, actually. Because I think the Earth's circumference is about 2,400 miles or something, or more than that. Way more than that. It moves at 1,000 miles an hour. So it can go through 24,000 miles. That's about right. So in 24-hour period, you start here and you come back there. He said, for example, if the Earth stopped moving, what would happen? All the forces, because it's moving at that speed, everything on the planet Earth is working. If you stop it, then the field of force is such that all the oceans would come into land. A person would be standing, would be blown by winds that are 1,000 miles per hour because the Earth's not moving. Imagine that. When we drive at 70, 80 miles an hour, we feel the wind resistance. Imagine 1,000 miles per hour winds. How intelligently Krishna has organized such that and we don't feel we're moving at 1,000 miles per hour. That's good. That's Krishna's very, very, very tiny spark of opulence. And he's appreciating it. And then he says, what happened to Lord Brahma? And Lord Brahma, our body is made of earth, water, fire, air, ether. Mind, in little bit of intelligence, and a whole lot of a false ego. Somehow the combination or the permutation of these elements is very unique for us. A whole lot of false ego, very little intelligence built into it. Lord Brahma's body, on the other hand, has very little false ego and a ton of intelligence. In fact, his entire body is created out of intelligence. I don't know how a body full of intelligence looks like, but that's his body. Nothing but intelligence. And that Lord Brahma couldn't figure out where he came from. So he only saw the lotus, and everything else was dark around him. So yesterday, as we saw in the video, he jumped down into the ocean. Sometimes it's referred to as he was climbing down the stem of the lotus. Couldn't tell. Somehow the stem was never ending. He couldn't see Lord Vishnu. And he was baffled. Except that he heard the word tapa, tapa. And he understood, because he has intelligence. Oh, I'm supposed to meditate, or to perform austerities of meditation on the Lord. That's the way of knowing things. So for 1,000 celestial years, to perform meditation. And lo and behold, the whole form of the Lord was visible to him. Right there, he could see himself sitting on the lotus, the stem connected to Lord Vishnu's navel, and he lying down on this fantastic Anantasesha with Lakshmi Devi and all his opulences, with thousands of heads, thousands of hands, thousands of legs. Suddenly, from a dark ocean to a completely, fully effulgent place. Now, a person who has 1,000 heads and 1,000 legs looks pretty ugly. He is described, not Vishnu, he is very good looking, he was dressed very nicely. So somehow when it's Lord Vishnu has all these heads and hands and legs, he's very good looking. He's this the Virata Purusha. So in the Vedic, in the Rig Veda, there is the Purusha Sukta prayers, which in Krishna book Prabhupada titles Purusha Sukta confirmed. That's the form Lord Brahma saw. He offered his prayers. So he was endowed, as we hear in the first verse of Bhagavatam, Tene Brahma Hridaya Adikavaye. But all of the Vedic knowledge was revealed in Lord Brahma's heart. If you notice the picture of Lord Brahma, in one hand he has a pot, in another hand he has Japamala, he also chants his rounds. Another hand he has a flower, a lotus flower, and another hand he has the Vedas. Because he, in this universe, has been given the responsibility of preserving the Vedas. So when he got the Vedas, suddenly, this is the beginning of creation, two more fellows showed up. Lord Brahma said, "Who are you?" My name is Madhu. Who are you? My name is Kaitava. And Madhu and Kaitava are personalities in the mode of passion and ignorance. And it is described that they stole the Vedas from Lord Brahma. So Lord Brahma didn't know what to do. And at that time, the Lord incarnated as Hayagriva. Now it's interesting, Prahlad Maharaj is praying to Narsingadev, half man, half lion, talking about his incarnation as half horse, half man, or the head and neck of a horse. And Prabhupada cautions us, he can appear as a fish, a tortoise, a hog, however he likes, but He always remains transcendental. Just as gold, if you find it in water, you find it in a pot of alcohol, or you find it in a pile of cow dung or whatever dung, the value of gold doesn't reduce. It's always valuable. It's gold. So the Lord may appear in any species, but it doesn't affect him in any way. He always remains pure and transcendental. So Madhu and Kaitava, so these are the personalities in the mode of passion and ignorance who stole the Vedas. And the meaning is, and that continues even today, Prabhupada writes, the modern demons who are in the mode of passion and ignorance, they're always opposed to Vedic understanding. Vedic understanding means those teachings that encourage us to become servants of Krishna. Mode of passion and ignorance take us away from Krishna. Mode of passion says, why should I be a servant of Krishna? Why cannot I be the master? Why not me? And mode of ignorance says, who cares who's the master? Let me just go to sleep. All I care about is sleep. And if someone doesn't agree with me, I'll destroy the whole place. This is ignorance, destructive. The mode of passion person is competitive. I have to win. The mode of ignorance person is, I will destroy everything. And these are opposed to the whole idea of developing our relationship with Krishna. So then today's verse, Prabhupada is quoting that yada yada hi dharmasya glanir bhavati bharata. So this particular verse is talking about Krishna killing demons. So Hayagriva, right in the beginning of creation, killed Madhu and Kaitava. And after that, again and again, we find the Lord incarnating for killing so many demons. He's just killed Hiranyakashipu. Right? In the verse, Prahlad Maharaj is saying, Hatva, you've come to kill. So what about Kali Yuga? The Lord has to appear to kill the demons. We won't say kill the demons, because previously it is described that in Satya Yuga the demons and the devotees lived on different planets. You carefully see, Hiranyakashipu was in his own place, Indra was in his palace, or Bali Maharaj is somewhere else on the side representing the demons. Indra and they're all in different places. By the time Treta Yuga comes, it's described that the demons are living in different countries on the same planet. Lord Ramachandra was in Ayodhya, Ravana was in Lanka. Dwapara Yuga, the demons are living in the same country in different cities. Yudhishthira Maharaj was in Indraprastha and Duryodhana was in Hastinapur. Not far from each other. And it's described that by the time Kali Yuga comes, the demon or the demonic mentality and the divine mentality live in the same body. Same person. Both are there. And so Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, if he had to come and kill, then this planet would be an empty place. Even the scientists would say, there's no life on earth anymore. Because in Kali Yuga, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu would have to kill everyone for the demoniac mentality. So he has to devise a way by which he has to kill and at the same time not kill. Because that's what Lord Chaitanya was told. Oh my dear Lord, if you kill Jagai and Madai, when will you stop? Everybody is like this. So then the point is to kill the demoniac mentality. And Chaitanya Mahaprabhu demonstrates how to do it. It's described that he does it through love and humility. He has weapons. Hayagriva has weapons, Lord Vishnu has weapons, Narasingadeva has weapons, and Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has weapons. Right? The Bhagavatam says, Sango Pangasta Parashadam. He appears with his expansions and weapons. So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu appeared with weapons. And his weapon, one of his weapons, is humility. Is very, very powerful. And that weapon is what we notice, how he treated Keshava Kashmiri, how he treated Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya, how he treated Prakashananda Saraswati, how he treated all the other persons. By his humility, he was able to defeat them. And in each case, his humility was expressed a little differently. But it was still humility. That's the most powerful weapon. And that humility first is, the first principles of humility is, I'm a servant of Krishna. And whatever I say and do and think must be from that perspective, as a servant of Krishna. If I don't say, do and think from that perspective, I will say, do and think, but it will be a little different. It may not be with humility. It may be mixed with humility a little bit. But our training is, our call to action is to try very genuinely, at least try. We may or may not be able to do it, but at least try to think, say and do as a servant of Krishna. And that means with anyone and everyone. People we meet. I was hearing one devotee sharing that they had a japa retreat, and one Prabhupada disciple, I forget her name, she was conducting the japa retreat, and she was telling the devotees, the reason we don't fully relish the taste in our japa, Bhaktivinoda Thakur gives some reasons for inattention. One of the first reasons for inattention, he says, is what's the Sanskrit term? At least in English, it is a misunderstanding of one's identity. When we chant japa as someone other than as a servant of Krishna, we can't pay attention to the holy name. Sanskrit term is missing, skipping my mind. Anyway, as a having a wrong sense of identity, as a servant. Now, servant doesn't only mean servant of this devotee, that devotee, servant of Kishore Kishori. It means as servant of Kishore Kishori, servant of all living entities, including the tiny little insects and bugs and people of the world. We are their servant. And we are servant means ultimately we are trying to please the master. That is something that needs to be cultivated and developed. And that's where the challenge lies actually for every one of us. I can say for myself, that's where it lies. That it's easier to see ourselves a servant of the Vaishnavas. But that same service attitude when we see other living entities may or may not exist. And our mood is to develop that. It doesn't mean we're this servant, that servant, not like that. We're servants of Krishna, and serving on behalf of, or being a servant of Krishna, we're serving all other living entities who are also parts and parcels of Krishna. That's what we have to do. One Srila Prabhupada was asked in the New York. Because that was a time when Allen Ginsberg would always hang out with Prabhupada. And Allen Ginsberg was like the epitome of drug and LSD use, and he was encouraging the young people, you'll get spiritual realizations if you take LSD. but he would bring his harmonium and jam kirtan with Prabhupada. So once a reporter asked Prabhupada, "Are you Allen Ginsberg's guru?" And it's described that that's like a trick question, because if Prabhupada said yes, then it would mean that the Hare Krishna movement is sympathetic to or ascribes to this whole idea of free drug use and LSD. And if Prabhupada said no, then Allen Ginsberg, who was very pivotal and helpful to Prabhupada, you know, said, "Wow, I'm rejected, right? So what, how do you answer the question?" And at that time, the devotee is describing that for Prabhupada, it was a natural, the answer was naturally from the platform of humility. And Prabhupada said, "I'm not anyone's guru, I'm the servant of everybody. I'm servant of everybody. I'm everyone's servant." So even the persons that we meet here and there, the point is to be a servant. As a servant of Krishna, all other living entities are also parts and parcels of Krishna. And that is our seva. And therefore Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, in that verse of humility, says, "Amanina Manadena." Manadena is to give others respect. And that's how this verse ends. Amananti. Amananti means they glorify, they honor. They're all connected to the word mana. Amananti. They honor. Who honors? The great sages. They honor you, O Supreme Personality of Godhead. They honor you for preserving Vedic principles, for preserving the processes by which one can come to you, for preserving the knowledge that brings one closer to you. And in the purport, Prabhupada says, anyone who's trying to approach Krishna, when there are obstacles, then Krishna personally removes those impediments and obstacles. There. Those entrusted with distributing Vedic knowledge, such as the devotees engaged in spreading Krishna consciousness, may sometimes be attacked by demons. But they must rest assured that demoniac attacks will not be able to harm them. The Lord is always prepared to give them protection. The devotees of the Lord are always ready to spread knowledge by which one may understand the Lord through Krishna consciousness, but the demons, being unable to understand the Supreme Lord, are full of ignorance and passion. Thus the Lord, whose form is transcendental, is always ready to kill the demons. By culturing the mode of goodness, one can understand the position of the transcendental Lord and how the Lord is always prepared to remove all obstacles on the path of understanding Him. So He's helping. Without Krishna's help, we can't progress. We can't proceed at all. We're trying, but that's not sufficient. That is required, that is necessary, but not sufficient. We need Krishna to pull us towards Him. And in that process, He removes the obstacles, He gives us some realizations, and sometimes Krishna, it feels like He's putting the obstacles. And that obstacle, when He puts, is a way of helping us reach out to Him, so then He removes the obstacles. Okay, I'm going to pause and see if any comments. Okay, Acharya Mishra first, then I'll go.
A few questions, Prabhu. You know, in this topic that we were discussing as far as the creation goes, the question came to my mind how if Brahma is situated on the top of the lotus and all of these planetary systems are within the lotus stem, and then He's entrusted with the job of creation. So His creation is all from within that stem of the lotus. There's nothing that He's usually, you think of creation, you think, okay, He's outside, He's sitting on the lotus, and now He has to create. But it's more that He's creating inside.
Yeah, but the stem is not like this. the stem is so thick that there's no end to it. You know, so massive.
It's interesting because we see pictures and it looks like Brahma is like almost too big to go down. Like he's got to squeeze down there. But that's where all the planets are.
It's
so
like
either he's
they something. Lord Brahma is like a plumber. You gotta get through the chute, and
they painted him too big, or maybe the stem too small. I'm not sure.
Whatever we say and think will only be imagination, and so we rely on Prabhupada's vision of things. That's how the stem looks and lotus looks. It's not like just to squeeze in.
My other question, I was reading that section also, and I think it's the 11th chapter of Krishna's entrance into Dwarka.
Yeah.
And he was received by so many, including the prostitutes.
Yeah.
Now there's another part where Prabhupada says that all of the residents of Dwarka Puri are Nitya Siddhas, pure eternal residents of Lord.
Perfected prostitutes.
So why would there be prostitutes? Are there prostitutes in the spirit? This was a question I asked, in the spiritual world, or is it only in the Bhoma Lila? And if they're all pure devotees, why would that be?
Let me see how to say it. But I don't know whether in the spiritual world there are prostitutes. I don't know. When you get there, you can send us an email and tell us if that's the case or not. On the earthly realm, where he manifests his dham, part of the inconceivability is all these things, that there is a varnashram type system, that somehow they're all cowherds. Or there are kings, prostitutes. There's a kingdom to rule, and even more so that he's very human-like. That's the inconceivability, which even tricks Lord Brahma, as we hear. What's this? He's just whatever. Previously, he saw the Lord lying in his serpent bed. All his opulences, Lakshmi Devi at his feet, and everything, you know, this aha realization for him. And then when he sees Krishna as a boy sitting and, you know, arguing about who gets the rasagulla, is this God? So the inconceivability is very, very, very deep. As soon as Krishna starts manifesting his swarupa, like his very human-like, it's very bewildering. One cannot argue when one sees the lotus stem and no creation and only the Supreme Lord on his serpent bed, and the picture you showed yesterday of Mahavishnu from whose pores universes. Anyone cannot will argue. I mean, no one will argue. Is this God? It's like obvious. Oh. Because that's part of his Aishwarya. You have to bow down to the Aishwarya. But you go beyond that, and a whole different illusion starts working. You know, Krishna running around, stealing butter, breaking a pot here, you know, stealing the garments of the young girls, and that plays with the mind like anything. Because the inconceivability, that illusion works in a different way. So the Bhagavatam takes us slowly and naturally, gradually develops our consciousness, that by the time we come to the 10th canto where he's doing these things, we don't say, is this really God? Is this really Krishna?
Thank you. Last question. If there were two demons who stole the Vedic yeah. knowledge from Brahma, the beginning of creation, if that was the beginning of creation, where did they come from? Are they like
modes of nature?
Self-born demons.
Wow.
the Brahmas.
I don't know the specific story of Madhu and Kaitava. Other Puranas have a specific how they were born. I refer to Prabhupada's lectures. He has not given very specific how Madhu and Kaitava come. He just says Madhu and Kaitava were there and they stole the Vedic knowledge. When we say the beginning of creation, it doesn't necessarily mean when nothing else was also there. It's in the beginning time. So, Madhu and Kaitava were there. There's a whole pastime in the Hayagriva Leela, whole pastime of details of what happened, how he killed them, and the whole thing. In fact, they have a blessing from Lakshmi Devi that they are invincible. So it's difficult to kill them. That's the whole intricate details. I don't want to say wrongly because I don't remember the details. Oh, Daniel, sorry.
Thank you for the lecture. I had a question about Paramatma. Basically, from my understanding, the yogi who meditates on the Lord within the heart attains Paramatma realization. I was wondering if one had to have any other qualifications, basically, to attain Paramatma realization, or if this is even really discussed in Shastra.
Well, this past Sunday, as part of our Bhakti Shastri class, we talked about this because it's at the end of 5th chapter and we're about to begin 6th chapter, which is Dhyana Yoga, Ashtanga Yoga process. And Ashtanga Yoga process is a method by which one gets Paramatma realization. So if you study the 4th canto, when Narada Muni meets Dhruva Maharaj, he gives him the Ashtanga Yoga process with a mantra. So first of all, we generally think that Ashtanga Yoga means the modern type of meditation, you know, just close your eyes and, or look at a candle flame or something. That's not Ashtanga Yoga. Ashtanga Yoga is what Narada Muni gives. He meets Dhruva Maharaj. He tells him to craft a deity using the mud from the banks of a river, River Yamuna actually, because he meditated in Madhuvan in Vrindavan. And he gives him a mantra, Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. And then he describes the form of the Lord to him, how his lotus feet are, how they're decorated with tulsi, and how he wears this beautiful yellow dhoti with belts around his waist, describes how his legs are so nicely shaped, how his waist and the abdomen is like a lotus flower, and his chest is broad and strong, his arms are like this, decorated with bangles and all other ornaments. Around his neck is a garland, and bees are humming around those garland, a tulsi garland, earrings of shark shaped, etc., etc. This very, very detailed. And tells him, as you're meditating on Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya, you remember slowly, step by step, body part by body part, develop your meditation. So that when he comes to realization, he should be able to see that form. Otherwise, if there is no object, or if Vishnu is not the object of meditation, someone puts a Kerala in front of you and you think that is Paramatma. You don't know what to meditate on. So Dhruva Maharaj, as he began and yes, perfected within 6 months, because on the side he was being very austere, that form, instead of meditation, now became steady in his mind. And he was able to gaze upon that form within. And suddenly that form disappeared. So that shock of disappearance made Dhruva open his eyes. And he saw that standing in front of him, exactly the way Narada described him to be. So it's there. In Kali Yuga, that kind of meditation is not recommended because it's not possible to execute. We can't stand on 1 foot. We can't even stand on 2 feet. We can't even sit on the floor without dozing off during japa, right? It's just very difficult. So we can't stand on 1 foot. We can't not eat. What to speak of eating dry leaves, only drinking water, and then only breathing once in 15 days. It's not recommended. Well, Narada Muni also, it's described that it is not necessarily Ashtanga Yoga, it doesn't say that per se, but it's what he gave Dhruva Maharaj was very specifically that method. So from the Bhakti Vedantas he heard, so it's understanding that it is the form of the Lord that taught him through Bhakti Yoga, Bhakti Yogena Manasi, because that's what he passes on to Vyasadeva. So it doesn't mean Ashtanga Yoga method is devoid of bhakti. It doesn't mean that. It means that that particular process for that yoga is designed in a way that is the Ashtanga Yoga process. Okay? And if we see Paramatma, we shouldn't say, oh, sorry, I'm not what we're looking for. That's development of our realization. That's nice. If we can even barely. Forget about seeing, even if you're just slightly conscious of Paramatma, that would be fantastic. Okay. Anything else? Srila Prabhupada ki jai.